I'm not pulling on my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for another drive to work, coronavirus edition. So I've been doing a lot of interviews while I've been stuck at home, and some of them have been with people from the present and some from the past. So today I'm going way back. So I have Chris Page with me today to talk about the design of Ice Age. So welcome, Chris.
Hi.
Okay, so I want to do a little setup for the audience because not a lot of them know some of the... So way back when Magic first started, Richard had a lot of playtesters, which you were one of them, back before the game came out.
Yeah.
And then Richard, sensing that maybe one day, he didn't realize how quickly, but maybe one day there should be more Magic, he had some of the playtesters, different groups, went off and made their own set as something Magic might need. So you were among what we now call the East Coast playtesters, which was you... Scathalias.
He added me to that group.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
He added me to that group. There was three people, Scath, Jim, and Dave.
Right, so Scathalias, Jim Lynn, Dave Petty. Go ahead.
Yeah, and Richard added me to those people because I had already been feeding him lists of card ideas back in the beta part of the playtest. Some of my card ideas got used in the gamma playtest, so... He wanted to grab me for one of the groups, and I was not pushy as far as being part of a group.
So let's go back to the very beginning of Ice Age, so people understand your group. When Richard said go off and make a set, Joel Mick and Bill Rose and Charlie Catino, that group went and made Mirage.
Yeah.
Barry Reich went and made a thing called Spectral Chaos that we borrowed for some of Invasion. But you guys went off and made a set codenamed Ice Age, I believe, right?
Correct.
So let's talk about that. How did that? Why'd you guys do that? You could make anything. Why was it Ice Age?
It was Jim's idea to do a themed expansion to go in the past. I'd done one of my April Fool's posts about how to redo Gathering Green, and it started sane and ended rare with a card called a Cookie Monster, where, like Chaos Orb, you would messily destroy artifacts by putting your mouth and chewing them, and ended with me going in derail until we should start a Sesame Street expansion with letters from mana and such and such. And Jim said, well, maybe we should do a themed expansion, but let's try doing some sort of historical thing, going back in time. What about Ice Age? And that's what got the idea for doing an Ice Age thing, to the best of my memory.
Okay. So what is your earliest memories like of making Ice Age? What did you guys do first?
Basically, we sat in rooms of DRL, David Rittenhouse Laboratory, where three of the four of us were grad students, and took the existing list of what was currently Magic and made small changes in it. These are some cards we'd like for a different environment. Change maybe 30% of the cards, 25% of the cards, and we'd see what would happen. The idea back then was, you'd have a fixed set for Magic, the original Magic, which was the black border, and then after those sold out after a year or two, transition to a different black border set, Ice Age.
Right. Let me explain that for the audience. The original idea for Magic wasn't expansions in the sense that we have now, where you keep building on top of Magic. The idea was Magic would come out, it would sell until it was gone, and then just a new Magic would start being sold. And so, right, you guys were trying to make a base set, but just a tweaked version of the base set, because... Yeah. It wasn't going to be additive. It was going to be replacement, sort of.
Yeah.
So, well, let's talk through some, like, of the mechanics and stuff that ended up in the set. Do you remember what happened first?
What happened very early on was the cards that crossed colors, like Tinderwall, where you had a green card, but it also was even better if you had red. Basically was a 0/3 wall, but you could spend a red mana and do some damage. I think those were Skaff's idea very early on. In fact, Richard borrowed one of those for his last five cards, Stedge Troll and Alpha. Cumulative Upkeep was also a very early one. It was Skaff's way of, I believe, wanting to fix Illusionary Forces, which in original playtesting was 4/4 for 4 mana with upkeep of a blue mana, and it was it caused blue to dominate with combat on top of all the counterspelling. And so Skaff's fix was to have it... Richard's fix was to drop the toughness to 1, which is what happened in the final release of Magic. Skaff's fix was to give it a cumulative upkeep so you could only have it for a limited amount of time.
And that was early. The cumulative upkeep
that
was pretty early?
That was early. Those were the early mechanics. There were five multicolored spells. They were the color hosers, that the multicolored ones that really hurt the one color that they were opposed to, Ghostly Flame being one of those.
I'm curious, because in actual sort of Magic history, Legends was the first set that had gold cards in it. But did you guys have gold cards in your set?
Oh, yeah. We had gold cards in our set before camp. Gold cards, we didn't know they were gold border, but multicolored cards were something we kicked around during the playtest. During playtest period on the mailing list, that was a known thing. I think Richard didn't avoid it. Richard avoided it in the original release just to keep it simple and because it developed late in the playtest phase, but...
Can you talk about the mailing list real quick? What was that?
Oh, there was a mailing list I joined in. There was a mailing list, Magic-L, that all the people with the coast that were on, a number of the playtesters were on, both our group and Steve Conrad's Canadian group. It was my way of contacting people after Richard finished his thesis and got a job in Washington the summer of 1992. That made me actually get an email account. As a way of discussing what was going on, posting card lists, analyzing stuff, Richard making announcements, proposing changes, and also Peter Axton talking about development issues as far as dealing with printing and stuff like that.
Okay,
that was the main list. That was the main discussion mailing list that connected these various groups.
So I think if I remember correctly, when Richard first asked you guys to make something, there was no timeline. Like, they had no idea when that would happen. He just was preparing for what he thought would eventually be needed. What?
A year or two after. Basically, a new thing would come out every year. I think it was the rough thing, but yeah.
Okay, so Magic takes off. Is a little more successful than everybody guessed, and they realized they needed things a little sooner than that.
Yeah, they realized. I think there's that one picture of all of us where, like, October of 93, realizing that this stuff is selling really quickly, and we were planning expansion a month. At that point, Ice Age was set to come out October, but maybe we should be ready to have it in September, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it got pushed back some because we realized that was crazy.
Yeah.
The big thing was that we realized people wanted new cards. And the idea of having 70 to 80% recycled cards, especially in the rares, was problematic. So there was a fair number of discussion. There was discussion about what should we do about Ice Age, and Rich's suggestion was to let us just rework the set completely and add in lots of new cards and tweak other cards.
Okay, so I just want to ask about some other things that were in the set and sort of how they got made.
Sure.
So let's talk about cantrips. So we, just for the audience who doesn't know, we refer to a cantrip now as spells where you draw an extra card. You know, that when you play the spell, you get to draw a card. You guys did a slightly slower version of cantrips when you first introduced them.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about how that came to be?
Sure. That was one of Richard. That was a thing that Richard proposed of one or two ideas probably sometime the year before Magic was released. And that was something I latched onto and pushed to include during Ice Age. We included the delay loop because we didn't have strong playtesting at that point. So we wanted to avoid degeneracy where you could just cycle through your entire deck in one turn. So that was just hesitancy for the loop.
Yeah, in early Magic, there wasn't a lot of development. I mean, there was a little bit, but not like we have now where we have, you know, playtesting.
Fallen Empires and Ice Age were actually the first. There was one serious playtest group, which I basically ran, and that was beginning of playtesting. So some of the cards were playtested, like Necropotence was originally did not have the delay loop. You could just cycle through cards immediately. And thankfully, we managed to catch at least that much off of Necropotence during. But we had a book. I mean, it spent like 60, I can't see if this is a playtest book with like 60 pages worth of notes on just testing various combinations where we'd throw in 18 of a card, 18 of the problem card, 18 of a land, and 4 of something else kind of thing. So we were we were trying to see what happened when you had gross amounts of something.
So you brought up Necropotence just because that's a pretty famous card from Ice Age. Do you remember the origin of Necropotence?
No, unfortunately. Lich, which is a similar one, came about because we were talking about greed from Legends, and we were worried it might be degenerate. I think it was the first expansion card we ever playtested. And we wondered, well, what if you tweak this? And said, that's dangerous. We should save it for later, and we did with Greed. And Necropotence may have come out of that same kind of thought space.
Okay, next. Snow. Snowlands. Where did Snowlands come from?
That's my fault.
That's your fault? So how did it happen?
That happened just because I was trying to think, how could you give a basic land and how could you do snowy land? And I thought, well, what if you just give basic land an attribute that other cards trigger off of? Other people liked it. We added it in, and it turned out to be a bookkeeping mess. What you don't see in Ice Age is about 40 cards that have, or 20 cards that have minor tweaks, like a +1/+0 if there are snow-covered planes in play, or cost one extra mana if you don't have snow covered such and such in play. And since we were worried that snow covered land, we were so worried that snow covered land wouldn't be better than regular land that we had all the pluses and minuses kind of balance each other out. So it became a logistics pain. Towards the end, I tried to rip the whole thing out, but thanks to Art, we couldn't rip it out entirely, so we still had it. And I was very happy to see that you actually made it work in Cold Snap. And if you wonder why there is essentially no snow cover stuff in Alliances, that's why.
Yeah, the audience doesn't really, unaware of this, but I've worked on Alliances on the development side. When you guys made Alliances, it wasn't really made as an Ice Age set, right? It was just made as its own set.
We were just having fun. Originally, the idea was that there would, back in like 93, there'd be two expansions for Ice Age, but one of them got shunted off to the Homelands group.
Anything else? We talked about Cube of Upkeep, Cantrip, Snowlands. Anything else that's memorable from Ice Age that you want to talk about? Things that were a component of the set?
Yeah, we were. We had number stacks. We were trying to match. Well, one memorable thing was that we had not yet had the idea that common cards should not have the smallest font size on them. So we had some cards like Balduvian Shaman. This whole idea, you could change the color of the circles of protection. Basically, you could do. You could change one word, the color, color name on a card, and give that illusion cumulative upkeep.
Let me read the card to them just so they can understand. So this is a common, guys. This is for the common in Ice Age. So it costs a blue mana, Balduvian Shaman. I'm reading it as it's written on the Ice Age cards. Summon cleric, tap, permanently change the text of target white enchantment you control that does not have cumulative upkeep by replacing all instances of one color word with another. For example, you may change counter black spells to counters blue spells. Balduvian Shaman cannot change mana symbols. That enchantment now has cumulative upkeep 1.
Yeah, so that was... It also turned out to be we tried to follow the gathering card list, like swap out creature for creature, that kind of stuff, but it turned out to be more defensive than regular Magic.
So here's a question for you. This is true of Ice Age and a few other sets like Fallen Empires your team designed. Your team seems to not be a big fan of flying. Like, they're just less flying than normal than in other sets.
Yeah, I think that because we all had strong personalities and we had the unfortunate mechanism that a card could only get in if all four people approved of it, which sometimes meant, well, we had 2 hours discussion about what to do with Giant Spider, for instance, whatever I don't remember the name of the replacement, but
I'll give it a second.
2/3 that would get +0/+2 if it could block flying creatures. And certain people had their colors they really liked or things they liked. And some people, I don't remember who, thought flying was really, really powerful. So we didn't include much of it at all.
Yeah, I think Scaff was not a big fan of flying, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's my memory, but I'm not certain of it. But yeah, that would track.
Yeah, Woolly Spider was the card you were thinking of.
Yeah.
1GG, 2/3, can block creatures with flying. If Woolly Spider is assigned to block a creature with flying, it gets +0/+2 until end of turn.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about... it's very interesting to me. I love hearing how other teams have done stuff. This idea that all four of you need to agree to add something. Talk a little bit about that. That's very intriguing to me.
It's being in a room and arguing back and forth and trying to find some sort of compromise card. We'd have lists on the blackboard often of cards, either back in the physics department, or there was one time where I came out for a week to Wizards of the Coast to develop that the house that the three of them shared, and various Wizards of the Coast meeting rooms, wherever those were at that point.
So
occasionally it would be, oh, three of us would come to agreement while the fourth person was asleep. That would sometimes happen. I remember Incinerate was a rough one because we recognized Lightning Bolt was too powerful. Some people thought Lightning Bolt was too powerful, so we duplicated. But if we made a card that cost 2 mana and did 3 damage, that would be a strictly worse card. And we were generally trying to avoid strictly worse, strictly better, unless it was really extreme. Like Wall of Wood, we didn't care that we made a card better than a 0/3 wall. And the eventual compromise was to give it a tiny plus. Doesn't incinerate also prevents regeneration.
Yeah, so it's 1R, deal 3, and then no creature can regenerate damage by it. I have a quick story. You and I had never worked together because you never worked at Wizards. Your three fellow designers, Scaff and Jim and Dave, I did work with all three of them. Yeah. Scaff and Jim, Dave left a little bit after I got there, so Dave and I overlapped by maybe a year, but... the story I always tell about Scaff and Jim, just because it's to show, like, when you talk about you have to argue things, is I remember it was late at night. Scaff and Jim were arguing. I was tired of the argument. I went home, went to sleep, had a full night's sleep, got up, had breakfast. I come into the office. I mean, it's hours and hours and hours and hours later, and they are in the same spot having the same argument. They hadn't left since I had gone to bed the night before.
That sounds about right. Yeah. Dave and I were somewhat less opinionated than Jim and Scaff. which isn't hard, but we still had fairly significant opinions. So it was four egos trying to find compromise. So, yeah, it was some of the cards had a long discussion period.
What's the card you remember having the most arguments about?
Probably Woolly Spider. Just because 2/4 for... 2/4 for... four mana seemed just too weak. And the other alternative table, I think, was just a 2/2. And this was a creature that blocked flying. I think the final compromise was to get a larger defense, but only when it was blocking flying creatures. I think the +0/+2 when blocking a flying creature was the compromise, and then we could put it at 3 mana because it wasn't always 2/4 and be able to block whatever the 3/3 creatures that came out were. A lot of this discussion was also theoretical. We almost never sat down and tried it out. This is because we didn't have the resources, we didn't have the time, we hadn't really done this before, but So probably argued into a number of theoretical things that were wrong.
Well, right. One of the things early on is the ability to play test. I know in Alpha, Richard sort of had, you know, made cards. He wrote them on little tiny pieces of cardboard. Did you guys do much play testing?
I developed... The four of us did not do much. We actually had the play test groups. There were problems with actually just... At this point, just sending the cards, getting that organized, that one of the groups got the cards like 1 week before the deadline for playtesting, and we lost a few playtest groups like that. I developed a playtest group that started doing rigorous playtesting. Myself, Stephen Mulholland, Bill Brickman, and some of Tamara Duran, Mike Clark, Brad Kierkegaard, friend. One of them's a friend I had in my lab, and some other gamers who ran a game store. And we just started testing the cards. The big thing was, since we had a science background, we tested against known standards. We created a couple standard decks, started creating statistics for how these competed against known, what we call touchstone decks, and analyzing them. And that did catch a number of cards. I think our motto was, this card sucks, our job is done. So at this point, we were looking for cards that were too powerful. We weren't focusing on cards which were too weak, which was something that would be covered later in later years, which is something else was important. But we were looking for degeneracy at this point.
So what else, when you think back to making Ice Age, what are your any other memories that really stand out as being like, this is a very strong memory of making Ice Age?
Its release was interesting. Also, just creating cards, spending lots of time going through various files. And they were all written up in tech, which is a mathematics language, because that's what Richard used for original thing. Printing out various sheets while we were designing various playtest sheets using some sort of cheap graphics program, and playing them.
Can we... You mentioned the release. That's a great story. So let's talk a little bit about the release of Ice Age. So what is your memory of the release of Ice Age?
You were there, weren't you?
I was there, yes.
Yeah. Sorry, I laughed at you about the Zurin Orb thing.
Yeah.
It was a reaction I was expecting most people to have, because this idea... the idea of Zurin Orb, which is for 0 mana and sacrifice a life... Sacrifice a land, you get two life, and you're just seeing how far people would go to sacrifice to gain life. But it turned out to be an interesting stalling card.
Yeah, the real quick story just for the audience is So we're in Toronto. We'll go into that in a second. We're in Toronto. We're at the event. There was one pre-release event. And I had been playing with a card called Dark Heart of the Wood, which is similar to Zorn Orb.
Yeah, that was the inspiration.
Right. And so anyway, I thought the Dark Heart of the Wood was stronger than people realize. So I saw Zorn Orb. I'm like, how can we print this? And I went to Chris and said, isn't this broken? And Chris goes, no, it's fine. I remember that. So that was,
sorry about that.
That's okay. So to talk about Toronto and like, what was the pre-release like? So let's talk about that a little bit.
I don't really have many strong memories of it. It was weird because it was a giant room with all the people playing something that you'd helped design. So it was, I guess the word surreal comes to mind.
Yeah. So it was the very first pre-release ever.
It was a large room.
Yeah.
With lots of tables, with all the people playing some sort of maybe Swiss tournament of these brand new Ice Age cards, and also just getting to see the play of them for the first time and discover what was out there because nobody knew.
Yeah, so the tournament, just for the audience, was it was run with ante. So when you defeated your opponent, you played with ante. So you would win and lose cards as you played. And then it was done, I think there was a cut on day one. So everybody played, and the people with a certain record would get cut to day two. And by the way, the trivia was, I played in the event because I was reporting on it for the Duelist. I made the cut to day two, and I had to step, they're like, you can't play day two. So I had to step out. I had to drop out because I wasn't supposed to win the thing. So
I vaguely remember there was discussion about that, but yeah.
But so I dropped out, and the next person got my spot. So that's what happened. Yeah, and the other fun thing about Ice Age was, like, do you remember they brought it in, like, armed guards brought it in, and they, do you remember that?
Nope. I take your word for it, but, yeah.
So finally it comes out. So what was it like seeing the set you'd spent a long time on, finally come out?
It was cool. I didn't get to see many people play it. I was at Gen Con that year, so did get to see people play it there, which was really neat.
Yeah, it's funny looking back that in some ways, I mean, I guess Legends was the first large set other than the core set. But in a lot of ways, Ice Age to me was kind of the first sort of a little more modern. I mean, Legends had a lot of issues in that it didn't really understand how it was structured. It had a lot of neat ideas, but Ice Age really felt to me like the first kind of cohesive large set in a way that paved the future. You know, it's a very...
I remember development of Legends, yeah. Ice Age was kind of a transition point, somewhat. It still is a problematic set, just in length, just in stalling kind of thing. But I think for the time it came out, it was good. What it really could have used was a lot more time for playtesting just to find out this stuff.
The other thing I should stress is at the time of Ice Age, I mean, you guys were aware of Limited as a concept, but the sets weren't really developed for Limited per se. Mirage was the first set that was really consciously made with Limited in mind.
Yeah, a lot. We were doing this one in a vacuum. Alliances, we started putting out cards to respond to particular decks that came out, but yeah, by Ice Age, we were not responding to the current environment.
So what is, I'm almost to my desk here, so we have to wrap up, but what is your favorite card from Ice Age?
Pygmyolosaurus.
Okay,
just because I got a dinosaur in.
Okay, so Pygmyolosaurus, real quick, I'll just tell them what it does here. It is two and a green, 2/2, summon dinosaur, and it's Swamp Walk. So you're just happy you got a dinosaur into Magic?
Yep, I'm a dinosaur fan, and I was able to justify, because there was a Scientific American article about dinosaurs that they found in Antarctica, and one of them was Pygmyolosaurus. So.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, that's Magic's first dinosaur, and like, it's funny. At some point, we moved away from dinosaurs. Yep. I think we made it a beast for a while, whatever. And then Ixalan came back, like, no, there's dinosaurs. It got to go back to being a dinosaur. So,
well, that and Old Fogey.
An Old Fogey, yes. Well, anyway, Chris, I want to thank you for joining us today. It's been it's fun for me to go back on sets that predate me. That doesn't happen a lot these days, but it's fun to hear stuff that I wasn't even there for. So thank you for joining us for that.
Yeah.
And guys, I'm at my desk, so we all know what that means. It means this is the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. So once again, thanks, Chris.
Thank you for having me.
And I'll see all of you next time. Bye-bye.